This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj. Hey, Waj.
Hello, hello. We got pardons. Pardon for you, a pardon for you. You get a pardon, you get a pardon. Everybody gets pardons. We're at 11 right now. Well, let's see what happens till tomorrow.
I mean, okay, look, the pardons have come out for a bunch of white-collar criminals, I think almost exclusively, with maybe a couple exceptions. There's like one drug conspiracy in there. It was a bunch of like white-collar rich people, defendants who were pardoned. And it's all, you know, kind of bad. I'm not going to say across the board bad, because in general, I'm in favor of pardons, and people should pardon a lot more. Like, all governors and presidents should pardon like 10 times the amount they already do. Or they could just reform the entire system and not need to do that. So I'm not against the pardons. And you know what? I'm more than sympathetic to ideas that, like, Blagojevich got too harsh of a sentence. A little bit too harsh, anyway. But, of course, the fact that we have now today Trump just willy-nilly throwing out pardons to, you know, what, tax fraud, Medicare fraud, literally the grossest, most overt level of corruption you ever get, which is selling a Senate seat. That's who he's heading pardons to. And this is the guy they want to have be their, you know, corruption crusader. It's all kind of nauseating, but at the same time, it's hard for me to get worked up over it all because he's already pardoned war criminals who murdered children.
Yeah, and that's what I try to tell people today is, like, everyone's really pissed off about this. And each tweet I've seen, I always try to remind people, and Eddie Gallagher, a Navy SEAL, a murderer, a war criminal whose own unit turned against him, and is now selling, like, apparel online. And apparently Trump was flirting with the idea of basically touring with Gallagher in ahead of the elections. I think it's fine. I think you should have Gallagher, Milken, Blago, like all these guys just like flanking Trump.
Oh, and Carrick. Don't forget Carrick, who is the long-term buddy of
NYPD, baby. And they should just chant drain the swamp.
So the thing that annoys me is people on Twitter, like whenever he's like drain the swamp, and people are like, look at how many lobbyists you have in your administration, which is, you know, a metric shitload of lobbyists. But why are we still pretending that the drain the swamp refers to traditional notions of Washington, D.C. corruption, a.k.a. lobbyist? That's not at all what Trump means. It's not what he's referring to. I mean, it's clearly, like, for him, the term drain the swamp means drain anyone who opposes me.
Well, because we live in this both sides media ecosystem, which after 4 years has finally woken up to the fact that this man is corrupt and racist.
Oh, it is not woken up. That's a nice thought, but I would not.
Some people.
Citation needed, Waj.
Waj's internal prayer and delusional hope. You can see it every day on Twitter and in his nightly and morning prayers to sweet, sweet Allah. But I think, you know, it's one of those situations where they're like, oh, he pardoned 11 people. Is he corrupt? Is he having a corruption flare-up? Maybe he's corrupt. Maybe there's a corrupted tinge. It's so naked and egregious now. And what I was telling someone just like right before we jumped on the call is there's going to be 8 more months of this. It's like Trump on steroids, because who's going to stop him? And apparently a couple of Republicans said they were very concerned.
So in reality, I think that these pardons were done to sort of like lead the way, you know, set things up for his pardons of his own co-defendants or would be co-defendants, definitely Stone, definitely Flynn, presumably Manafort as well. Presumably Papadopoulos. It's been so long since Papadopoulos comes up. Yeah. I feel like Trump will probably throw him a bone, not really for Papadopoulos' sake, but because he wants to show there's a whole conspiracy against him and it was all nonsense. So therefore, Papadop, you're on deck for a pardon as well.
Well, also for Stone and Flynn. I mean, the thing is, the fix is in. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
But that said, if you were, like, I do think he's doing this just to, you know, soften terrain for his pardons of his friends. But at the same time, if you were going to have a list of people who I would want to accuse of or would want to investigate for like paying off for pardons, this is a pretty good list to start with.
But this is like if the criminals wrote the ending to like Goodfellas and Casino and Irishman, and everyone got away, right? Like, if the criminals were the judges and the jury, because it literally is like what a mob boss would do if he feared literally zero retribution.
And if you're only a mob boss who is deeply concerned with whoever appears on Fox News.
Well, that's true, because that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And that's how you get his attention. Everyone knows that. See, that he's I've always said this. He's the easiest mark for any con man, any foreign leader. You just have to compliment him, frequent his business, tweet some praise about him, and he'll eat shawarma out of your hands. He'll do a curtsy for you if you're the king of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, the just problem with Madoff is that he didn't, like, he gave an interview recently, but not to Fox. That's where he went wrong.
He needs to be on Fox. He needs to be on Fox, and he needs to praise Trump in the morning or in prime time. He does that, he's getting a pardon.
Well, legit, like, so, like, I'm a white-collar defense attorney, and I have a lot of clients who are far more deserving than the people who got pardoned today. And part of me is like, am I being a bad attorney by not having, like, advocated for them to take this strategy for the past 3 years? Like, I don't think, actually, my clients, I don't think they would have done it. But, like, should I, as an attorney, have been like, okay, this is your best bet for, you know, what you need to do? And I can think of a couple cases. I'm like, well, shoot, like, maybe that would have been the route to go.
If I was still an attorney, I would straight up tell them to do that. I said, listen, you want to get out of jail? Just, you know, praise Trump. Maybe
you have to pay off Fox, though. It's praising Trump, but also paying off Fox enough to get on their shows.
Well, pay off those close to him, right? Because these are all friends of the criminal. So, like, your friends of Rudy. Friends of, you know, the right-wing ecosystem, friends of the hosts, friends of Fox News, friends of lobbyists. And, you know, it's a small ecosystem, and they probably put a list there, and, like, this guy's got a lot of money, and he's going to, like, crow and, you know, sing your praises and probably put money in your coffers. And they're like, fantastic. And the Republican Party is so corrupt that they will completely bend the knee, because I don't think any Republican has said anything. In fact, Senator Kennedy, as we all know, who's not, by the way, a simple man. He's an elitist who graduated from law school and went to Oxford. He's out there today defending Bill Barr. And so far, I haven't heard really any Republican condemn these 11 pardons yet. Have you heard any Republicans say anything?
I think they are all in hiding right now. And to be fair, like, the pardons are the least of what he's done lately.
That's true. Because we got Vindman, we got Yovanovitch, we got the pardons, we got the fact that he was acquitted of impeachment and apparently has said he's going to interfere again. What else do we have? What am I missing? What are the chaos?
Yeah, so our post-impeachment era continues about as expected. It's, I think the way to best sum it up is Trump's own tweets, where he, this was what, last week or something? He tweeted out, quote, Mr. Trump's foes struck at him, but did not take him down. A triumphant Mr. Trump emerges from the biggest test of his presidency, emboldened, ready to claim exoneration, and take his case of grievance, persecution, resentment to the campaign trail. That's what he's tweeting out. Oh, also he called himself a king in that tweet. But the fact that he thinks that this is like a thing to be proud of, that he's on his campaign of grievance, persecution, resentment. I mean...
And he misquotes Emerson.
Yes, the biggest crime here is definitely that. But, I mean, he's for once, he's accurate. That is what's happening here. But the fact that he is not even, let alone ashamed to say that, he's proud of it.
Because it's a flex. It's a flex, right?
Oh, it's all flexing now. He's flexing left and right. And I think the most embarrassing part of it all is that the only pushback we've seen has come from Bill Barr. Now, was it genuine pushback? No, not. Don't think so. But the only public display of pushback we've had was from Bill Barr, the ultimate toady.
Well, because Bill Barr's not stupid. He's a very disciplined ideological extremist who wants to carry out his agenda without Donald Trump acting like an idiotic Bond villain, broadcasting it, or in this case, tweeting it to the world. It's like it makes the crime harder.
It's calculated, but still, he's the only one who's seen any value in actually doing so, pushing back against it. So to back up from last week, we had Stone, we had Trump tweeting about it middle of the night. And then after Trump like tweets, thank you, Bill Barr, for taking over the Roger Stone case and showing those Mueller prosecutors what's what. Not literally, but close enough. Barr gave an interview to ABC where he decided to, I guess, make a stand or appear to make a stand. And let's hear from Barr himself. Here is his explanation for what happened with the Stone recommendations and why he decided to substitute the prosecutors who were on the case, substitute their recommendations with his own.
Putting that in motion and directing that be done when someone walked in and told me that, about the president's tweet. That sort of illustrates how disruptive these tweets can be for the Department of Justice, because at that point I had made a decision that I thought was fair and reasonable in this particular case. And once the tweet occurred, the question is, well, now what do I do? And do you go forward with what you think is the right decision, or do you pull back because of the tweet? And that just sort of illustrates how disruptive these tweets can be.
So you're saying you have a problem with the tweets?
Yes. Well, I have a problem with some of the tweets.
Yeah, so Barr says here that, he was always intending to do this before Trump tweeted about it. And it just got awkward when Trump tweeted to ask him to do this because, well, he'd independently and honestly and legitimately decided to do it all by himself. Now, I will say I do believe part of this part of Barr's response about the tweets. Like, I feel like that's heartfelt. I'll give him credit there. I think that was a truthful statement about his feelings on Trump's tweeting. So, I mean, there is absolutely no reason to give Barr any benefit of the doubt here.
No, none. Zero. Why would anyone do that? Why would anyone give him the benefit of the doubt? It's like a con man who cons you,
yeah,
like 10 times in a row and says, oh, this time, it's like the scorpion and the frog and you're the frog. And
Barr's Except, here's the thing. I actually genuinely believe that Barr might do this on his own because he knows what Trump wants.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. He's like, why are you – I bet Barr's sitting there like, bro, I got your back. I know what to do. Just shut the F up. Put the phone down. Don't tweet. You're making my life really hard. And now all the target is on me and every single one of my moves that everyone should have been inspecting with like a microscope is now going to be under like, times 1,000 microscope, because now you got like all these DAs and prosecutors and all these judges. And that's been another development, who are asking Barr to resign. It just makes the crime that much harder to do. But it's Trump. He's so impulsive and self-destructive that he just can't help it. So I kind of feel bad for Barr because he can't execute his criminal vision with a type of efficiency and effectiveness. But I also kind of feel good that Trump is so impulsive and reckless that he's making that much harder for Barr to do it.
So yeah, I do think it's possible Barr would have done Trump's bidding without being told of it. But I also don't necessarily believe that Trump didn't reach out before his midnight or 2 a.m. tweet. Either way, it doesn't matter, because when the president starts openly demanding things be happen investigation, I mean, it's not just an appearance anymore. It's like there's no reason to trust rule of law as actually occurring the way it should.
Well, he's the top law enforcement officer, according to him, right? That's what he said at the tarmac today, that it's not Bill Barr, it's Donald Trump, the president of the United States, who somehow is magically the top law enforcement officer in America. Awesome.
Third Love does bras differently. They believe that every woman deserves to feel comfortable and confident every day. Their bras are designed to fit you and not the other way around. They are designed measurements from millions of women, and their bras are made to fit your life. They have over 80 bra sizes, but they know that the only one that matters is yours. So go take their Fit Finder quiz, answer a few simple questions, and you can find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. It's actually fun and takes less than a minute to complete. Did you know that breast shape matters too when finding a good fit? Third Love can help you identify your breast size and shape and find styles that fit your body. They are hands down the most comfortable bra you'll ever own. Particularly if you get the Seamless Lounge bra, it is hands down my favorite bra ever. All their bras are lightweight, have super thin memory foam cups, and all their bras have straps that won't slip and tagless labels, so there's no itching. Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra, and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today. The DOJ should always be strongly independent. We have this awkward thing going on in our democracy where we have DOJ nominally, it is an executive branch agency. It's under the president. It is under the president's powers. But at the same time, we have this like good faith understanding that presidents aren't going to act on that power and that DOJ will be independent to choose who to prosecute and not prosecute. And like, you know, it all works out well if everyone's acting in good faith and we're all, you know, like, okay, we'll be good here. Technically, it is under our power, but we have a long tradition of being responsible and democratic, so I'm not going to interfere. Trump's like, hell no, I'm getting in there. Now, here's where Barr was asked about what rights Trump does have to interfere with DOJ's operations.
We like our prosecutors and hope they stay.
You're known around town as someone who believes that the president has vast authority, broad authority to do the job, to execute the will of the state. Does the president have the authority to just direct you to open an investigation and you have to do it? Can you help people at home understand, can he do that?
Well, I discussed this in detail in my confirmation hearings. I think in many areas, such as that don't affect his personal interests.
Terrorism
or fraud by a bank or something like that, where he's concerned about something, he can certainly say, you know, I think someone should look into that. That's perfectly appropriate. If he were to say, you know, go investigate somebody because and you sense it's because they're a political opponent, then an attorney general wouldn't carry that out.
Democrats on Capitol Hill have said.
I found this clip fascinating because, well, one, there's never a time where that should happen. That's not the kind of interaction DOJ and the president should have. You should never have the president directly talking to the attorney general or giving orders in this way at all, ever, for any case.
Ever.
Like the president.
Doesn't matter if it's Democrat, yeah. Republican, doesn't matter. You need the independents.
The White House can have influence on DOJ's operations. That's okay. That's normal. But like, it's indirect and it's broader and policy focused. Like, for instance, we're going to pursue, you know, more case specific sentencing procedures and not just have mandatory minimums apply everywhere all the time. That's okay. It's where your specific case is being addressed that red flags start going up everywhere. So even the fact that Barr says it's okay sometimes for Trump to get involved is not good. But what Barr says there is fascinating to me because you have the interviewer suggest terrorism and he's like, sure, that. Oh, and also a bank maybe where there's fraud or something. Like, that's the idea at the top of Bill Barr's head when he's asked where can Trump rightfully get involved in DOJ prosecution decisions. Because that sounds an awful hell of a lot like what happened with Halk Bank, Turkey's bank that was involved in laundering money to Iran.
Ah, yes. And somehow magically Barr was involved in that. And Donald Trump and his administration was deeply involved in kind of helping this bank of all banks.
Yeah. Well, then the next day we had CNN come up with an article that says the CNN article reports how Berman, who is the Trump appointed attorney in SDNY, has allegedly, I'm still skeptical on the fence there, but allegedly tried to stand up for independence of DOJ and has pushed for action on, quote, certain politically sensitive cases in opposition to DOJ leadership, most notably the indictment in October of the state-owned Turkish bank, Halk Bank. Quote, according to a person familiar with discussions, Barr personally spearheaded an effort last year to negotiate a settlement with the bank that would have allowed it to sidestep an indictment after Turkey's president, Erdogan, pressed Trump in a bid to avoid charges. That's insane. That's an impeachable, like, here's, like, the new modern era. We have impeachable offenses that are 30, like, paragraphs into articles all the time now. That's an impeachable offense. We now know that, I mean, we have Turkey's dictator asking Trump for a favor for Halk Bank. Trump then communicates to Barr, who has no reason to support Halk Bank aside from Trump wanting this, and tries to get Halk Bank out of charges.
And then also, let's not forget that phone call with Erdogan that resulted in Trump basically ignoring all of his national security advisors and then removing U.S. troops from northern Syria, which then allowed Turkey and Russia to control the area, kill our allies, the Kurds, and essentially have ground troops there where once there was U.S. troops, leaving us in a far more vulnerable position. And to this day, we don't know why Trump did it, but we do know that Trump does have business interests in Istanbul. And maybe, just maybe, Erdogan gave him a call and said, yo, I'll help you, you help me. I mean, I think that sounds a little bit familiar. Maybe it's just me, but I remember something called quid pro quo and impeachment. I don't know about you, Susan.
Yeah, maybe I'm crazy. At the same time, I can't, like, I mean, here's his great defense. Like, can I rule out the possibility that Trump just was like, eh, you're a dictator, I like you, you're a strong man, you're a tough man, I do good with tough guys. Sure, you want it, I'll do it for you.
No, but he needs something. You always need something in return.
Oh, sure, but like, I could sit on a whim like that, someone doesn't care about. Either way, we have Barr on ABC in an interview who was like, being asked, what should Trump properly ask you to do? And he's like, oh, banks involved in like fraud. And then we have an article say confirming that Trump asked Barr to intervene on Hulk Bank's behalf. I mean, no one cares anymore, but yeah, that's, again.
Do you think, I mean, I'm going to take the Wayback Machine to Barr's hearing. Remember the exchange with Senator Harris? Do you think she knew? Like, do you think she was tipped off and was onto something during that very awkward exchange if the president has asked him to pursue any investigations? Remember that?
I don't think so necessarily, because it was really obvious something that had happened already, especially with Whitaker. So I think the question was routine at that point. But then she obviously seized on Barr's, like, sudden, like, seizure. Huh?
What? What is that?
Suggest? What does suggest mean? I don't know. That's a weird word.
What? Suggest? That's an SAT word. You didn't have that when I was growing up.
At least we know Barr's a bad actor.
I remember when this was happening. I was on MSNBC, and they're like, someone said, oh, no, Barr is an institutionalist, and he's going to come in, he's going to do the right thing, and people respect him. I'm like, why? Why are people saying this? This is a man who wrote a 19-page, single-spaced letter auditioning for the job, criticizing the Mueller report, who has the most expansive, radical view of executive power, who helped as attorney general when he was with George Papa Bush, pardon all the criminals from Iran-Contra, and he is an extremist if you listen to his speeches. And now look, he's been doing the bidding of Trump. This guy might be the most dangerous Trump appointee.
He is hands down. Hands down.
Someone said, I said this on Twitter, and someone said, no, Pompeo. But I think it's Barr.
No, I mean, Pompeo is dangerous in his own way, but Barr is the most dangerous overall. But the whole point of this interview was that, again, Trump is interfering with Barr's ability to pretend to be this noble institutionalist. So this was his pushback. But it was obviously not, like, it was obviously not spontaneous, because Trump clearly knew this was going to happen. Trump was clearly okay with it. And, I mean, the immediate reaction for the White House is, like, Trump is not upset about Bill Barr's comments. Like, well, no shit, because, like, he knew it was going to happen, and he's fine with it. However, the next morning, he then tweets out, the president has never asked me to do anything in a criminal case, A.G. Barr. I think he's trying to quote A.G. Barr there. This doesn't mean that I do not have, as president, the legal right to do so. I do. But I have so far chosen not to do so. It's not funny. It's the death of our republic, but it's a little bit funny. So
it is. It's a little bit funny.
So he's like, oh, yeah, sure, of course. I never told Barr to do anything, but also I totally have the right to do so. So, you know. And you know what? Barr said nothing. Then again, we have Tuesday, where once again, Trump takes Twitter. His sort of truce with Barr lasted like less than 24 hours. And he has now gone back to tweeting attacks on Judge Berman, the judge in Roger Stone case.
Who is not flinching, by the way. She is dope.
Which I think, in Trump's brain, like, he's like, okay, I can't attack Barr, or I can't ask Barr openly to do stuff now. I can't say that, like, oh, Barr is so great for doing my bidding. Those are bad things to say. I won't say that anymore. But he's like, well, I can attack Article, like, the judges, right? I can attack them, or I can make my
attacked them in the past and no one said anything, right? I attacked that Mexican judge one time.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I guess today, Tuesday, he tweets out, Judge Jackson has now requested a brand new trial on the unambiguous and self-outed bias of the four-person jury, who's also a lawyer, by the way. Madam four-person, you're a lawyer, you have a duty, an affirmative obligation to reveal to us when selected that the existence of tweets in which you're... Wait, skip ahead. Point being, in this tweet, Trump sums up, pretty obvious he, Roger Stone, should get a new trial. I think almost any judge in the country would order a new trial, but I'm not so sure about Judge Jackson. I don't know.
So, I mean, it's like, it's not even subtle. And I still want to remind people that the jury came back pretty damn quick. He was tried and convicted by a jury of his peers on 7 counts, if I remember. And Roger Stone is one of the most unsavory characters in modern political history. Just another friend of Donald Trump. Just a reminder for those of you who have forgotten.
Yeah. So Barr, who went on the record as part of like his like, you know, I'm a good guy tour, said like, oh, I support the Roger Stone prosecution. And it was righteous, I think he said. It was a good thing. He should be convicted. I was happy when he was convicted. I just thought, you know, the 7 to 9 years is too harsh. Which if it was about all cases, I'd be really happy because 7 to 9 years was too harsh. And it'd be fantastic to have an AG who thought that about all defendants and not just the old white ones who are friends with the president. So there we have Trump, who I think it's possible didn't realize that this is also crossing the, like, this is not just attacking the judge. This is attacking the DOJ's independence as well.
And remember he, and gosh, there were so many tweets, but I remember this one. Remember he also incorrectly said, isn't that the judge who put Manafort in solitary confinement, even though judges don't put prisoners in solitary confinement?
I mean,
well, there you go. Is this the judge that put Paul Manafort in solitary confinement? All caps. Something that not even mobster Al Capone had to endure. How did she treat crooked Hillary Clinton? Just asking. And reminder that Clinton has never been convicted or sentenced.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So Trump's actually just mad that the people he wants to have prosecuted aren't being prosecuted. I mean, he's mad about other stuff, too. But like McCabe, guess what? And what is certainly a display from Barr to show independence, had the DOJ finally announced, like months after it should have announced already, that McCabe was not being charged.
McCabe, Comey, Strzok,
Page. McCabe, so the thing is, McCabe, they tried to charge him. They took this case to a grand jury. And McCabe, it turns out, is not a ham sandwich because the grand jury refused. And which yet, is, DOJ,
For those of you who are not lawyers or haven't gone to law school, basically there's a saying that you can indict a ham sandwich, meaning it's so easy to get a grand jury indictment. But the fact that they couldn't even get a grand jury indictment for Andrew McCabe just kind of shows you that it was a, let's use another food analogy, nothing burger.
Yeah, it was a flawed prosecution, which didn't even turn prosecution because they couldn't get an indictment. So they didn't, what should have happened then is they should have like cleared it. They should have been like, all right, we're done with this case. They didn't, they sat on it and waited today till, like not today, earlier this week when they could be like, oh look, Barr's so independent, he's not charging McCabe. But that pisses Trump off because, you know what? He can pardon all his friends. If he needs to, he can make all that go away. He can't unilaterally put someone in prison, thank God. So why he keeps all these tweets are like, why is the other side not being punished? Why is Hillary Clinton not behind bars?
It's like a venting session, like a child who gets everything he wants and then he doesn't. And then,
but he
so
can't
he can
get
just...
this one thing he wants. He does lack this power. Like there's nothing he can do to fix that part of it. Now,
yet, but it really, and you know, it's really encouraging, like I said, to see so many prosecutors and so many lawyers and so many judges finally kind of speak up. Like he's put Barr in a kind of an uncomfortable situation because, you know, we've talked about this on this podcast for about a year, but because there's been like a shit show every day, thanks to this administration, like he's gone under the radar with all the shady stuff that he has continued to do as attorney general. But now like the focus is entirely on him. And it goes back to our point that like he cannot execute his ideological mission to help Trump when Trump is literally pulling the rug from under him by tweeting at him. Like it makes the crime that much more difficult to pull off in broad daylight.
And we are lucky that Barr, for all of his flaws and sincerity, does want to be seen as the institutionalist. He does want to be taken seriously. He wants to be seen as a rule of law kind of guy. He's not one at all, but he does crave and need to be effective that positioning. So as long as he's still seeking that position, Trump really cannot get everything he wants. He can get a lot of what he wants, but not everything. However, I just saw a tweet from earlier today that I missed that, holy cow. After the tweets against the Roger Stone judge came out, there was a rare declaration of meeting federal judges to discuss how to handle this assault on their constitutional power and the gravest threat to judicial independence that the Constitution's ever faced, I think that's fair to say. I mean, not ever. At least in the past, you know, since 1900. So this meeting was designed to, like, discuss this threat from the president and how to handle it. Trump now tweeted out, I hope the Federal Judges Association will discuss the tremendous FISA court abuse that has taken place with respect to the Mueller investigation scam, including the forging of documents and knowingly using fake and totally discredited dossier before the court. Thank you! Exclamation point.
I like the thank you, though. That's nice. That's a nice touch.
I mean, it's pure trolling, but it's like he's making everything worse on purpose. Like, he knows he's blowing up the ability of anyone to do anything in our current, you know, rule of law ordered society. Because, I mean, it's also self-destructive too, because by tweeting that, it makes it impossible for judges who won to give him his way to give him his way.
That's what I'm saying. He has impulse control issues. Like, he just can't.
But yes, that's true. And I'm not suggesting there's a grand design here or this is on purpose, but the overall effect of his just rampaging tantrums create this kind of institutional instability that's hard to repair. Like, how do you prove now that anyone's rulings are not based on what the president's saying, either positively or negatively? Like, how do you show that they're not doing this because Trump wanted it, or that they're not doing it because Trump wanted it? You can't.
That's why Judge Amy Berman Jackson is in such a tough position, right? Because she still has to maintain her professional neutrality and independence, as she knows that the entire world is going to be witnessing how she responds, right? Is she going to be firm on the sentencing, and will it be seen as quote unquote retaliating against Trump, or will she, go easy and thereby cave on Trump? And I sit there and I think, wow, Putin must be laughing, because his long term plan, again, is not to destroy America. Our enemies realize they can't destroy us, but what he wants to do is to sow enough chaos and exploit existing confusion that we lose faith in our institutions. So if we've already lost faith in the media, which we've done, and people have lost faith in Congress, and now people have lost faith in the DOJ, and they've lost faith in the presidency, if you lose faith in judiciary, like, what's next? You see what I'm saying? It's just conspiracy theories run rampant, and voila, more conspiracy theories.
At the same time, if I had a guess, it won't be hard to figure out what she'll do. She will probably do the institutionalist thing. And I need to check the guidelines again, sentencing guidelines. The thing is, it's not a hard case. The sentencing guidelines are clear. 7 to 9 years, it's what is there. If she has the leeway, which she might, my guess is she'll come in at like 5 or 6 years. That's probably the appropriate, quote unquote, just sentence here, because the guidelines are always bullshit. That is excessive. And it is her role to sort of temper that a little tiny bit if she can, based on the guidelines. I don't remember what sort of enhances there were.
She cites the guidelines, she's fine.
Well, she will. But like, I think she can come under, I would say 7. She's not going to go for the 9 for sure. But it could, like, 7's where she's probably going to end up, unless she can find a way down to argue it down into 5 or 6. And that's a predictable response that, like, no attorney will be surprised by. But Trump can use it to say that she's punishing Stone because she's, I don't know, deep stater.
He always is. That's what I'm saying. We are dealing with bad faith actors who will always cry victimhood. So anything less than 5, he's going to attack her. And she has to know that.
If it was 2 years, he'd attack her. It wouldn't matter. That's the whole
point. That's what I'm saying.
But if she does 2 years, then everyone else is going to know that she is, like, caving to his demands. And that'd be even worse.
Just go to the – exactly. You know that you're dealing with bad faith actors. You know that he's going to attack her. You know he's going to pardon it. That's what's going to happen. All of these, you know, this pardon-palooza, which is what, like 11 pardons today, it's all a setup for his pardon of Stone and Manafort and Papadopoulos. We all know that. It's just a matter of when.
Speaking of bad faith actors,
do your job.
Guess how Bill Barr has responded to Trump's continued tweeting about the case?
I just got in my inbox as we're recording this. The Washington Post says that Bill Barr has told those close to Trump he is considering quitting if the president keeps tweeting about Justice Department investigations.
I swear to God, kids, I'll turn this car around.
One more time, if you don't shut up, I swear. And the kids are like, whatever, Dad, you're lame, we own your soul.
Oh my god, this is the lamest response he could possibly give. Like, he felt compelled to say something. He did feel compelled. Like, his silence was noticeable given he put this like fake line in the sand. He's like, his tweets make it impossible for me to do my job. And Trump's like, gonna keep tweeting. And then everyone's like, Bill Barr, what you gonna do? So he can't say nothing.
Another quote: he has limits, said one person familiar with Barr's thinking. No, he doesn't.
This is so sad.
Yeah. And plus,
he's sad for us mostly, but like, God, it is.
Is working in the Trump administration.
It is just amazing. Like, Trump's one true power is his ability to make so many people voluntarily hand over their dignity.
Yeah.
Without fail. Like, it's a true power. He has a skill at this that I don't understand, but it is a true skill that he has to get people to sacrifice who they are for him for no good reason.
He can make people into reeks, and that's his superpower. And like they'll turn into reeks for so little. Like, it'd be one thing, right? If you make a Faustian bargain, you get something. But that's the power of celebrity, and that's the power of the presidency, that everyone around him transforms into a reek who will voluntarily bend their knee and forfeit their dignity and their honor and give up their spine. And for what? I mean, the humiliation must be, like, stunning. Like, look at freaking Ted Cruz, man. He mocked his wife and his father. And now Ted Cruz just, like, on television promoting Russian conspiracy theories and making phone calls for Trump. Kids, don't go full Ted Cruz.
I do think Barr is a different kind of actor from Ted Cruz. Not in a good way. But I do think that... I think Cruz doesn't give a shit how, like, if he appears a hypocrite. He doesn't care. He doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I think Barr does care. Like, for him, he needs his appearance of being the moral, righteous force of the universe. He needs that whole shtick to be who he is. So I think this cuts a lot deeper against Barr than it does against Cruz. I mean, Barr is more subservient than Cruz is, because Cruz is still doing his own agenda. For Cruz, it's like, I could be nice to the president and get my way politically. Like, that's my best way forward to get my policies through. Barr is, I mean, he's all in. But at the same time, he needs this appearance of, yeah.
He desperately needs the veneer of being the company man, the institutionalist, the right guy. It's part and parcel of how he was able to get back in and basically do what he's doing, right? Under the guise of being an establishment career man. I would say under much the same guise that Kelly got away with it, General Kelly.
Oh, I forgot. We missed the whole, like, story, like, the whole, like, Bolton. Oh, we even talk about Bolton and his failures. Bolton's like, oh, Kelly's a great guy, trying to do so good, because Kelly came out against against Trump. Oh, my God. Like, wait, hold up. The former chief of staff / head of DHS gave a speech where he's like, man, this Trump guy really sucks, basically. And it was like a blip, and no one cared.
No, 5 days ago. 5 days.
Oh, that's crazy. Can you, this wouldn't dominate for a month easily, justifiably, in any other administration. And I'm like, oh, shit, that big thing that happened that I forgot happened because it was a murder.
Yeah, and also Bolton, right? Bolton and at Duke University last night, I believe. Or was it 2 nights ago, was being interviewed and was promoting his book. And he said, you'll love chapter 14 when they were asking about Ukraine. And now
someone asked him a question. He's like, nice try. I have to wait to come. Oh, please, you sad motherfucker. You sold everything. You didn't shave your mustache to get the job. So I guess points to you for that. But other than that, you sold out everything.
He's straight to true to the follicles, so we have to give him props for not shaving
his mustache. The one concession Bolton will not make.
And we have to remind people that that's the reason why Trump originally did not choose him to be his national security advisor, because he did not like his mustache.
So all of that, like, part of me is like, is there any chance that Barr is being real right now? And no, there's not. It's all posturing and all bullshit. But I will say that, like, I give it a little more credence that he's getting close to some kind of nuclear option, probably not quitting, but something, more than I would for, like, Lindsey Graham or Ted Cruz.
Okay, so yes, only if he can replace himself with a loyal yes man.
I think, well, the thing is, he chose, like, last time he had Whitaker, that was that guy was a living stack of, like, wheat bread. He was nothing. So if he gets another acting AG like that,
what's wrong with wheat bread?
I mean, it's fine. You just don't want as an attorney general.
yeah, that's like it's like Whitaker. Oh my God, what a colossal figure. And he auditioned for it and got the role by appearing on CNN and other cable news shows, basically crapping on the Mueller investigation and promoting Trump's ego. And voila. He knows how to get Trump's attention, and he ended up as acting attorney general.
So Trump has often been successful in having his power increased by having acting positions, acting heads of whatever.
How about Mick Mulvaney? Still acting chief of staff.
Oh, that's just like a power move. So it has worked for other agencies for Trump to have these poor, desperate sods who are like, I'm the acting. I want to be upgraded to a real boy one day. In those cases, it helps Trump's power hold on the, you know, executive branch. For Attorney General, I don't think it works quite the same way. So him having an actually Senate-confirmed person in place is who supports his agenda is helpful to Trump. So it would be a blow. Like, this is not a bluff. Well, it's probably a bluff. But it's not a toothless bluff. Trump can't just seamlessly replace his Bill Barr. He needs his Raycon. So I think this is just a threat that actually has teeth. But I actually don't think it's impossible that Barr could get pushed to a place where he would resign. Because end of the day, like, for Barr, Trump is a tool. And him having a pretend claim to being a legitimate institutionalist rule of law kind of guy probably has more power that outlasts the Trump administration.
You think so?
Yeah, I think for him playing the long game, that, like, if he sacrifices that, I mean, Barr has nothing without that. That is his, like, hold of power. So if he gives up that, he is basically done for in terms of political importance. So I could see him making a gamble that he could have a future past Trump if he doesn't cave into this.
I think all of them are going to have a future past Trump. That's what I've said. Every single one.
Not all of them.
Really? Everyone fails up here in D.C. Everyone fails up.
Where's Priebus? Where's he?
He'll find a way to fail up. He's around. Oh, they all fail up.
Sean, like, Spicer, where is he?
Okay, Spicer had a book deal. Spicer was on Dancing with the Stars.
That is not failing. Okay, that is not failing up. I'm not calling that. No, failing up has to have a meaning, and that is not failing up.
No, it's totally failing up because Sean Spicer got six figures for Dancing Like a Moron for a couple of weeks. He landed at Kennedy Harvard School of Government as a visiting scholar. And last year, the day before the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which, you know, there was a party in D.C. and, like, was a party with all the media types and media folks, and I was there and my agency threw it. Guess who was having the greatest time at that party? Sean Spicer.
Okay, that is, I will call that failing with a comfy landing. But for me, failing
How about failing sideways? How about failing sideways with a comfy landing?
Failing sideways.
In a 2-2. In a 2-2.
For me, failing up means you continue to have power and relevance. I do not think Sean Spicer has that. And I do not think Barr sees his, like, great finale as failing out of DOJ to being on Dancing with the Stars. However, if that happens, I'm totally on board.
Bill Barr, and you know, Bill Barr is 69. I always thought he was older, like, for some reason.
If that's the career he's going for, okay, cool. I don't see that being the crash landing Barr's going for. So yeah, I do see a world where, like, the scales could weigh out for him. He really would quit. Are we there yet? No. But I don't think it's a fully toothless bluff, mostly because Trump needs him, so he has more power right here. But also because I think he does have a line that's very much farther away from where we are now.
All right, here's a question. What is Barr's endgame?
I mean, same as Pompeo's.
Besides Rapture. So you think straight up Rapture?
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, he's basically said that. Like, that's the endgame here is the, you know, Christian dominion over the world.
Yeah, so he's a dominionist. All right. He wants Christian power over America.
I mean, that's his endgame. Like, is he expecting to get that right now? Probably not. But, like, that's what he's going for here. So, yeah, like, if Trump isn't the vehicle for it, he'll find a new one.
But we have to both sides this, Susan. Both sides it.
So, let's both, okay, I can do this. Both sides it. Bloomberg.
At Bloomberg, he's now tied, according to the polls, with Bernie. 22%.
Oh, my God.
He's in the top three in a lot of the states. He has spent $400 million. The ads, like I predicted, were going to be very, very, very effective. He is seen as the foil to Trump. He has spent bazillion amount of money hiring all these really talented staffers and politicos in D.C. and all across America. He's willing to spend a lot more money, and he's willing to be the New Yorker who's willing to go toe-to-toe, and he has nothing to lose. I think he will be a force. Of course, by the time this comes out, we're going to be witnessing Bloomberg in action for the first time in Nevada. He has made the debate stage where he'll be like Neo with all the agents firing bullets at him.
And so the age of the American oligarchy resumes.
Yeah, I think people are underestimating him. I don't know why.
So I'm not going to claim to be like the eternally optimistic one or like the one who's always like, oh, we could get past this or anything. So I'm not. I think for me, this was the week that I stopped consciously having a lot of hope. And it was all because of one stupid tweet that he had. But the response to it made me feel like I went to a bad place for that. It was when Trump tweeted about how he was meeting with the, governor of New York and how maybe they should stop their investigations and stuff if they want to get anything done. Bump. And for me, it was just like, of course he would do that. But I thought there'd be more of a reaction. When the president is literally announcing to the world, he is proposing a quid pro quo where if New York stops investigating his company and its business operations, he'll stop using federal government powers to punish New Yorkers. That should have been the line. That should have been the moment. That should have been something.
For what it's worth, I tweeted the crap out of it, I think 7 times that day and the next day, and Walter Schaub tried his best like every 2 hours. And everyone's forgotten.
I have not forgotten. I think about every like hour. That's the moment where my faith that we can get past this in some fashion. I mean, I'm not saying we're doomed, but that's the moment I stopped having faith that we could definitely get through it. Because it's open. It's open. Like it is. There's nothing left to argue about. We know what this president wants to do. We know what his goals are. That is now off the table. Like that is no longer a thing that matters. The fact the president wants to use the federal government to punish a state that is taking adverse action to his private business, we've accepted that. We've internalized that is okay. That's something's going to happen. That's just the thing that is. It's a way that we are. It's how the world exists in our current existence.
Yeah, it's permanent damage. I mean, that's the problem, right? And that's why students and scholars of authoritarianism warn about it, and everyone discounted them for the last 4 years. That's what Bannon said. You flood the zone with so much chaos. We get so used to it that our new normal becomes degraded, right? Well, oh, he didn't grab women by the pee. Oh, he didn't abuse a Ukraine. Oh, didn't he just get acquitted over this? That's okay. Well, at least he hasn't shot anyone yet. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And then as we have talked about on this podcast, this is bad for democracy because if you are a president, doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, aren't you going to be like, well, he didn't do it, so why should I?
But there are escalation moments. There are. I mean, we've been on a slow descent for a while. But for me, it was just the raw, open corruption and the non-reaction that...
Hey, I reacted. I tried to do something.
People react. Like, there was, like, reactions. Like, people... Like, Walter Schaub, God bless him, was like, every hour is like, we're, like, 3 hours into the apocalypse. There's no one responding yet. And no one was responding. And that's why we are beyond any kind of quick fix. It doesn't matter who's elected. Like, it doesn't matter at all what happens in 2020. There's no quick fix.
If Bloomberg is elected.
Oh, God, don't.
Well, it might happen. What do you think is going to happen if he's elected?
I don't have any hope anymore. That's like the really disturbing, like, I don't see a good path out of this. If Bloomberg's elected, we're done for democracy. We're purely oligarchical system then.
Well, we're almost there. And I think we weren't
almost there. We were in a bad place, but we weren't almost there.
Because now it's over, right? Like now you're like anyone with celebrity and fame can buy their way through. The Democratic Party is going to shatter just like the Republican Party is shattered. I don't think people realize that if he gets it, there's going to be a wing of the Democratic Party, the Progressive Party, that is going to be done with the Democrats. They're done. And especially the Bernie wing and I think the Warren wing, and rightfully so.
Bezos running next time, like whatever. Yeah, like, it's, we will. We're done. Like if Bloomberg's elected, we're over as a democracy. I hope not. I'm being like dramatically.
No, but
if Bloomberg's elected, we are done.
Well, it might be because a lot of people of color are like, oh, people of color won't vote for him. People of color have always done what's better for America in this country, and so many of them are like, listen, if this guy can beat Trump. And if this guy is what whites want, let's just be honest. They're like, if this is what white people want and we have to live through white people's temper tantrum, fine, we'll vote for Bloomberg. And basically, exactly what you said, Bezos is going to run, Gates is going to run. Who knows? We might have Elon Musk running. Democratic Party is open.
Elon Musk can never win. Doesn't matter.
Well, he's like, every Tulsa for you and a Tulsa for you and a Tulsa for
I feel confident no matter how awful our future is, I think that even Elon Musk couldn't use his money to win.
I mean, the good news is, and this is a terrible thing to say, but like age sometimes helps because Bloomberg's 78 and on best health.
Oh my God. They're all so old. Why are all the front runners so old? Like it's really America's unfortunate.
It's America's freak out moment. We're so traumatized by the popular election of a black man that we absolutely cannot have another person of color or someone with female parts.
Hillary Clinton will be a young, fresh voice compared to Bloomberg.
Doesn't matter. She's a woman. And
I mean, but like, just the point where, like Hillary Clinton, who was a very old establishment figure, is like a more centrist, fresher voice than the guy that we're talking about could possibly get the nomination, who I still don't think he can, but whatever. Like, this is all... This is all a disaster. Ugh. Man, Robbie needs to come back next week to like counteract my doomsaying. But like, it's a bad week. Like, this is not great. Institutions will not save us. They are proving very steadily they're going to fail us. Trump is going to push it as far as he can. And the only question now is, can he push it enough to win in 2020? And by win, again, I don't mean like actually win. I mean like, can he push it enough to fuck everything up forever?
But you know what? I still haven't given it up because the people – I just have to have faith that enough people get so disgusted by this.
But here's the thing though. We have a complicated Democratic primary where you've got enough people – like what, we're at seven now – who there's not really a good reason for any of them to bow out because they can lay claim to what, like almost 15% of the vote or whatever. So we're going to have this fractured system no matter what. Now it's how it is, which is okay. Normally we could have like a oligarch versus oligarch election, which is not an election. Like that's a real possibility we're facing now in America. So yeah,
oligarch. Who's your favorite oligarch?
You can't have a favorite oligarch. That's the point.
Because oligarchies, you know, they only care about themselves, their wealth, their ego, and their friends.
And even if they're good, even if a good guy oligarch doesn't matter. Like that still destroys the system. Like the fact the oligarch himself might be a nice guy doesn't matter. It means your system is based on oligarchy and not on democracy.
Yeah, but then you know this is where unfortunately things have to go so bad that enough people wake up and do something, or things get so bad that they just get worse.
I don't like those options. Anyway, we're not in doomsday yet. There are still many futures ahead of us. Things can fracture out in so many different ways. But like, there are definitely possibilities on the table now where I'm like, I don't see us coming back from that.
Yeah, we have to entertain those possibilities because a lot of people ignored them 3 or 4 years ago, right? So that's why I think talking about it and teasing it out and thinking about counter strategies and responses is not us being cynical doomsday scenario connoisseurs. I think it's just like us being realistic, and that's why Bloomberg, unless he completely like falters after tomorrow, it might be Bernie versus Bloomberg. It just might be. And then if Bernie, who's 78, is refusing to release his medical records, and the dude just had a heart attack, and by the way, Bloomberg's health ain't that good either. And of course, Trump, who freaking eats steaks and burgers and Diet Coke, is healthy as a horse because everything sucks. That's what we got to look forward to. Old white men battling it out, screaming on stage.
I'm just saying I was really smart and thought ahead and married someone who was not American. So it's like diversity of democracies that could fail. Like hopefully whatever happens, at least one of our home democracies will keep being democracy to fall back onto.
One friend of mine said they've already plotted their escape and it's going to be Portugal. I said, why Portugal? Because they've already gone through their...
That's a solid, solid choice, actually.
They said they tried their fascism moment. It failed. They're back to democracy. And at least for 20 years, for the rest of my life, I think I'll be okay.
Oh, man. It's a good choice. I'm jealous. That is hands down my go-to now. If, like, I could choose my escape route. Portugal. Anyway, for us Americans to deal with this, until next week.
Until next week or until 2021, Portugal or bust. I meant, sorry. God bless America.
Until next week. See you, Waj.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.
Don't die, Susan. We need at least 8 more months. It was finally Bill Barr.
Yeah.
Bill Barr and idiocy killed Susan. She couldn't take the idiocy and the self-destructiveness. It was too much for her to bear.
Hannah, cut all that.